This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
There are institutes where top scientists regularly prepare projections of a world thrust into severe climate change. You can bet there are parallel war rooms, if you want to call them that, where military plans out their role in a stressed-out warming world. Here to tell us about preparations and planning in the American military is retired U.S. Army Brigadier General Gerald Galloway. He's a visiting scholar at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. After 38 years in the U.S. Army, Galloway joined the faculty of the University of Maryland. He's worked at West Point and at the White House. He's always got a focus on sustainable water use. Gerald has three master's degrees and a PhD in geography from the University of North Carolina. He's also a member of the Security Advisory Board at the Center for Climate and Security. Gerald Galloway, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, I'm delighted to be on with you.
There are plenty of high-placed politicians, I'm afraid, who continue to question the importance of climate change to our security. Does the Pentagon think it's real?
Well, the Pentagon certainly does. What's kind of interesting, if you go back to the middle of the last decade, right after Hurricane Katrina, and people began to look around and see challenges, a group called the Military Advisory Board, which is part of an adjunct to a think tank here in the Washington area, put out a report called Climate Change and National Security. And in that, they indicated that climate change was going to be a threat multiplier for our nation, that we needed to realize that in many different ways, the things that take place under climate change will make the security situation far more difficult, and that more attention needed to be given in the defense establishment to dealing with climate change. As a result of that, the Defense Department did react, and if you look at the quadrennial reviews, these reports that are put out by the Department of Defense every 4 years, the quadrennial reviews that have been since that time have pointed out that it is a stressor and that things need to be done, and in the second one that was recently released, pointed out that things are being done to address it, not only overseas and how we might deal with potential crises, but also in terms of the installations we have, which are the platforms for our military in this country.
You've specialized in water resources for decades, and for decades we've heard about the coming water wars, especially in the Middle East. Have they arrived?
No, and that's an interesting point. If you look back in the history of water, there have been very few real conflicts over water. Because everybody realizes how important it is, and if you play with my water, I'll play with your water, and it's a lose-lose situation. There's very little win-win. Tensions rise as a result of water conflicts, where you're taking more water than you're supposed to. You're hurting my agriculture. You may be hurting the people in my cities. And then that will rise to a certain level, and typically it will be worked out. No different in many ways than we have in the Western water wars in the United States, where we have rules that say the first in time is first in right, and they'll hold the water. As the water gets scarce, they continue to use it. Others lose it, and that creates friction. But people work out ways, as we just did in California, to deal with this.
I've talked with your colleague Shiloh Fetzak about the climate relationship with the civil war in Syria. It's not the cause, but it certainly was a factor. What other countries do you think have been destabilized in part by changing climate?
Well, I think that the challenge you face is to find that direct cause-effect relationship. As you say, in Syria, the shortage of water, the reduction in crop yield in many parts of the world where the Syrians were relying on import of the products that were being grown in other places in the world, that causes problems. But we see the same thing in India, we see the same thing in Southeast Asia, and the potential exists anywhere because a drought can appear very quickly. And even if it's a regional drought, it can create instability in that particular part of a country. So it is real. It is happening. We know, again, can't say that climate change itself was the totally responsible for the cutback in wheat supplies or anything like that. You can say it certainly created tension that then led to the disaffection on the part of many of the people and was a contributor to the conflict.
Well, then we have sea level rise. I mean, it's going to affect U.S. Navy bases like in Norfolk, Virginia. But I'm thinking of the millions of people in Bangladesh. Sooner or later, they're going to be displaced by sea level rise in that low-lying country. And when they try to move, there's nowhere to go. It's heavily populated. People are impoverished. I wonder if that will eventually develop into a situation the military will have to watch out for.
Well, clearly, when you have a situation like that, sea level rise is causing displacement of people in coastal communities around the world. It is causing many problems in large cities that happen to be located in coastal areas where the population that is most at risk are the poorest. And so you're going to have resettlement in communities. And again, the opportunity for that to force instability in the government, to bring down governments, is certainly there. And what the military is doing is, as we military members are out in different relationships with the countries, they are describing the things that could be done right now to adapt to the future conditions and to mitigate the potential problems. The United States is also very big in humanitarian assistance and disaster recovery. When there is something big, the people that show up with the ships and with the troops and the ability to do something about it is the United States military. And so as you have that, as you see these disasters like those in the Philippines and Japan, the U.S. military is going to be called upon more and more under the conditions that occur in climate change of increased rainfall events, increased storms, sea level rise. All of those things put together are going to put stress on nations, and the U.S. is going to be there to help them out. In spite of what many people say, it just happens that we are the people that are called when there are these big problems.
Yes, we have seen that around the world. I'm also thinking, too, about very tricky situations like the very big floods that happened in Pakistan in 2010. And that was a nuclear country, still is a nuclear country. There was some concern about whether these nuclear weapons can be kept under wraps. So I guess all of that kind of mixes together for the people who are doing the planning at the Pentagon.
Well, that's the whole issue of threat multiplier. The threat multiplies because we're creating instability. We don't know what's going to happen, who will be in charge, who will be there to deal with the issues. The U.S. has gone in since the Pakistan flood and worked with the locals to see what could be done to prevent a reoccurrence, to prevent not of the flood itself. Floods are natural events and they're going to continue, but to make sure that people are prepared to deal with these floods and that when you do have a natural disaster, the recovery can be quick and the tendency for the nation to come apart disappears. And so there is a lot of thought about that. These are our partners and our allies in many parts of the world, and we're certainly interested in helping them out. The U.S. it is much better to prepare in this country and abroad for a disaster so that you have created the resilience that reduces the risks and reduces the time to recovery when these events do occur. And so the military is looking out to see what is our relationship, what challenges do they face, and where might we be able to give them assistance, either through federal agencies or through military support in some way, or just being aware on our own planning that we might have to step in here. This is a particularly vulnerable area, for example.
Now, as you know, Gerald Galloway, at Paris, there was an agreement that fossil fuels will have to be phased out over time. And on a tactical level, the armed forces have to work out how to power themselves in a world where fossil fuel use becomes constrained. What is the U.S. military doing to reduce their dependence on fossil fuels?
Well, I think I'm proud to say that our military forces are probably setting the pace for the rest of the country in many of these areas. They're looking at the types of vehicles that have less consumption of these fossil fuels when we still have to use them. We don't shut down everything we have right now. But how do we improve as we bring in the second generation of a tank or a vehicle to improve the efficiency of the engines? Helicopters, how do we reduce the consumption of an engine that has been in use for 15 or 20 years and we're bringing on the next generation? Let's cut back on 25 or 30% on its fuel use. Looking at ways to fight war in the future, certainly one of the things that's looked into is what is that going to mean in terms of our energy requirement? It is not just the consumption of the fuel in terms of the climate change issue, but in terms of what it takes to move this fuel into various parts of the world. So the more we reduce our need for fossil fuels, the more we find ways in which to fight wars without heavy demand for supply lines that carry fuel abroad, carry fuel to contingency operation areas, the better off the military is. Now, on their fixed installations in the United States, there's all sorts of things that are being done to improve, first of all, reduce the energy consumption, conserve water, do all the sorts of things that any community would do. But because it is a nationwide effort and because the Department of Defense has extreme reach out into various parts of the country, it is being done across the nation, and it is being shared the ideas and opportunities with the local communities that surround these installations.
And I'm hoping we'll see a lot more solar power and wind power for the military.
Well, the military is using solar power. They're investigating everything that can be done. They've used biofuels, as an experiment to see what could be done. You can see the energy consumption of military installations has been drastically reduced for the base operations types of functions, and that's extremely important. Again, it's not only a matter of reducing the fossil fuels for climate change, but reducing the use of fuels to reduce the cost of the military and to allow the military then to put the monies they do have into the weapon systems that are needed. So it's, again, a win-win situation. We reduce the costs and at the same time perhaps create funds that would be available for things that are higher priority.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is retired Brigadier General and water expert Dr. Gerald Galloway. In the 1990s, you chaired a report for the White House on the Great Flood of 1993 along the Mississippi and Missouri rivers. Part of the South have flooded again this year, and in fact, we're seeing more extreme rainfall events in many parts of the United States. Gerald Galloway, are we prepared for flooding well beyond the ordinary?
No. The answer is we are beginning to realize that floods are natural events, that climate change is causing extreme events that we had not seen in the past, that more intense rainfalls, just as those we had in Louisiana and Texas recently, extreme events that haven't occurred, at least in recent histories, are things that we're going to have to expect more often. And at the heart of all this is where people choose to live. Land use is a critical issue in dealing with the floods in this country. If, as we expand, as the population goes up between now and 2050, where are those people going to go? Are they going to go, as many people would like to, right to the coastline and hug an area where the sea level is rising and intensity of storms is increasing? Are they going to go to the lowlands near rivers and occupy there? Or are officials going to look at this and say, no, we need to think ahead. We need to see what might be happening in the future, and we need to control where people are going to go, and we need to take care of those people that are there now, either by shifting their location or helping them build up so that they're less at risk to the flooding. And fortunately, I think that many people are moving in this direction. States are doing this. The president just issued a new federal flood risk management standard that said, in effect, look, the federal government's going to stop investing in rebuilding people that are damaged to where they were. If you're going to be getting federal support for any sort of flood-related activity, you are going to rebuild at a higher elevation so that you have less chance to be flooded if a bigger event occurs, which we would logically expect to have happen.
You know, a lot of military planning is necessarily kept secret, but I think the climate response is not a good candidate for secrecy because we all face this global problem. I'm wondering if there's a way for the Pentagon to involve the American public more on this issue.
Well, I think the Pentagon has done a good job of publicizing the activities that are taking place. And one of the reasons, certainly in the continental United States, why it's so important is every military community is closely linked to a local community. We share employees. The people that work on the base or the post live off post in many cases. Some of the workers are civilian and rely on the military for some services. They rely on the fact that there's an economic boost to their community by the military. So we're in this together. And dealing with climate change is not a problem. If you go to Hampton Roads, the Norfolk, Virginia area, there's Langley Air Force Base, there's Coast Guard stations, there's the U.S. Navy there, the Army has facilities there. All of them are linked to the communities around them, and they are trying in a very open and a collaborative method to deal with what are they going to do over the next 10 or 15 years to deal with climate change and especially the sea level rise that's occurring find there. You can find the same thing in Charleston, South Carolina. You can go around the nation and see on the Gulf Coast and on the West Coast the same things.
Have you talked with military people in other countries? Are they also aware of climate change and preparing plans to deal with it?
Most certainly. Our friends in the UK and Canada are certainly aware of this. The people in Australia have been dealing with some very significant climate issues, and the military has to take that into account. Again, in the UK, like the United States, humanitarian assistance and disaster recovery operations are a big part of what their military has done. And they recognize that's ensuring that the stability of a country remains. And so they're looking at what do they need to do with the organization, the structure of their forces, and the mission operations that they're planning to ensure that they can react when disasters occur. And knowing where they might occur in areas that are of interest to them is of great importance, and they are working hard on that. As a matter of fact, on this military advisory board that I mentioned before, British Rear Admiral Morissetti has been a sort of a companion as they've moved forward, and he's been working very closely with the Ministry of Defense in the UK in dealing with this. So I would say that they're as much involved as we are, and they're as concerned as we are about the challenges.
All right. Now, is your participation at the Center for Climate and Security part of that effort to bridge between military and civilian action on climate change?
Most certainly. And the work of this Military Advisory Board and the Center for Climate Security, it becomes important for us to get out and talk to people. Education is so important about this, to talk about the fact that there is a linkage between climate change and national security, that it's important that the military and those that support them, and that's the industrial base, that's our highway systems, all of those sorts of things have to take into account what's going to happen with climate change. Just imagine last week I-10 in Louisiana was shut down because of the heavy rains. That's not very useful if you're trying to deploy forces somewhere. If a runway is covered with water, that's not very good. And so spreading this information, working hand in glove with the people in the civilian sector and with the business community, NGOs, in dealing with climate change is something that's very important. And I think the Department of Defense is reaching out, and our center, in terms of climate and security, is also reaching out. But it's a cooperative effort that everybody has to participate in.
As we finish up, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think you've nailed it. Climate change is a challenge. We tend to think of it only in terms of, are we going to have too much rain or too little water in our communities? But it stretches far beyond. It can change the way in which society operates. And it is no secret that when climate change has its effects, the people it's going to affect are those that are the poorest and the least able to deal with that. That in turn reflects itself in the potential for insecurity in a world that is very fragile right now. And we want people to survive. We certainly, our nation has long been someone that's out there trying to help, a nation that's trying to find ways, solutions for people who have problems, many of which we've solved or are attempting to solve. So having the nation's military involved and thinking about climate and climate in terms of national security is very important. And anything that you can do to let people know that this exists as a challenge is certainly appreciated.
Our guest, Dr. Gerald Galloway, is a retired U.S. Army Brigadier General. He is now associated with the University of Maryland and advises various institutions, including the Center for Climate and Security at climateandsecurity.org. You can find links to the topics we've talked about in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. Gerald, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your interest.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.